I'll just check in with El Blumbito.
Hello and welcome to this late night debate reaction edition of the 538 Politics podcast. I'm Galen Druk. Tonight was definitely the feistiest of the debates so far. It was also the first that featured former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg. So we're going to break down what exactly happened and how it might affect the race going forward. I'm very interested to hear everyone's takes. After all, the Nevada caucuses are just 3 days away at this point, so this debate could potentially matter. Here with me to discuss are Editor-in-Chief Nate Silver. How's it going?
It's going well.
You like that debate?
It was a fun debate to cover. I'm not sure it was a debate that the White House would be unhappy about watching, but like it definitely was like you definitely saw the stakes were raised, and you definitely saw like people who genuinely dislike one another, either for personal or for political or tactical reasons.
Wait, Nate, he hasn't introduced me yet.
Okay.
Also here with us is senior politics writer Claire Malone. How are you?
I'm good. Go back at to it.
And I'll mention that Micah is not here with us this evening, but continue, Nate. You said the White House may not be unhappy about it. Were you insinuating that Trump would have liked what he saw in terms of winning in November? Is that what you're trying to say?
Kellyanne Conway tweeted that.
I mean, you had a bunch of candidates who are going after one another. I mean, maybe it depends on, you know, frankly, it depends on which Democrat you want to run against if you're Trump, which I didn't mean to make any implication about, because I do think tonight was one of those debates that could meaningfully shift the odds in the nomination race. Right?
Okay, so let's get into that before we try to guess how Trump might be viewing the debate or whether or not a discordant primary actually reduces Democrats' odds overall. So, Claire, top line takeaway from the debate. What happened?
Well, I think we have to talk about like the expectations game going into this debate, which was basically it's the first debate with Michael Bloomberg. How will he shake it up? He's polling decently well and, you know, in national averages. Is he going to actually, you know, make a splash? How will we respond to inevitable attacks on him on the stage? And I think the answer was, I mean, I wrote about this on the live blog. He has this sort of fascinatingly flat affect, completely blasé while everyone is just, firing around him, hands waving, blah, 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 which was an odd, it was discordant almost with the rest of the stage, which was on fire tonight. I think the other thing to talk about is how sharp-elbowed Elizabeth Warren was. I mean, the first thing she said on the debate stage was about some of the sexist things that Mike Bloomberg is accused of having said to women. She, throughout the night, kind of said, you know, Bernie's plan isn't very, very good and mine is. And she was really sort of out for everyone in this way that felt very particular to this debate and perhaps particular to the fact that she is no longer has the stature that she once did in the race. So she kind of felt like she was really coming from behind. And then sort of the side gig happening was the really intense, really mean Klobuchar Buttigieg.
It felt personal.
It felt super duper personal, and it was wild to watch. And they were standing right next to each other, and it was just like, it was like if I were saying terrible, terrible things to Nate, and he had to just like face forward while doing it.
And then you're just, like, both in the camera.
There should
shot.
Be like a privacy screen.
It was like a weird. It was, yeah, the social. I mean, and Warren was standing right next to Bloomberg when she was saying all these things. So that, like, I thought about that the whole time. I was like, these dynamics are so weird.
Okay, so this was clearly the feistiest debate.
Yes.
I think I can share this information in terms of the audience of our live blog. We had a larger audience than we might otherwise have had.
We have audiences.
We have large audiences in general. This was maybe the biggest. Was it because of where we are in the race? It's basically like, all right, if you got a Hail Mary, this is your time to throw it. Or is it that Michael Bloomberg was on the debate stage for the first time?
It's all of the above. I mean, it's where we are in the race. It's the fact that 35% of the country roughly is voting within the next 2 weeks. It's the fact that though Bloomberg adds a lot of intrigue, clearly. And I thought he was pretty terrible. I think it's a little dangerous because voter reactions can always surprise us. And so I kind of think of this thing as like a median expectation with the margin of error, right?
So the median expectation is terrible and the margin of error
The margin of error runs from doesn't affect him to campaign ending.
All right.
Absolutely.
It's not going to end before Super Tuesday, though, because he has gobs of cash.
You know what, though? Until 2 weeks ago, he was polling at 9%. And 9% wins you a pony and maybe a few delegates in one congressional district in Oklahoma or something, right? 9% doesn't get you shit. And so he's moved up to 15%, not on the basis of his ads, but on the basis largely of, like, media buzz and curiosity and hype and some belief. The things that articulate in the ads, like the fact that he's the one to beat Trump, are true. And, like, all of that could go away. He has, by the way, another debate to survive. Maybe low expectations will be so low that it'll help him, right? I mean, clearly he seemed, like, not very prepared. But, like, Bloomberg didn't just need to have to maintain ground. He actually has to gain some ground to get to a point where he's at in the mid-20s. If you're in the 20s and you kind of are tied with Bernie, you're actually getting quite a few delegates. If you're at 16% nationally, and a bit stronger than that in some Super Tuesday states in the polls, those polls are pretty nice in some of those states, right? But 18, 19, 20, that's not actually going to help you that much. That puts you in a position where you have some delegates, but it's probably either Bernie or a contested convention. And they're kind of very predictable errors, right? They were not errors of, like, he got caught up in something and a question was framed the wrong way. He faced all the scrutiny that he's expected to face. And, like, he sounds like he hasn't talked to, like, a normal American in, like, 10 years.
Well, so what do we think about the debate for Sanders, the current front runner?
I think Bernie was fine. I think he was actually not great in the first half. I think he was better in the second half when he kind of used Bloomberg more as a foil. I also think these debates never seem to matter one way or the other for Bernie. I think the take that, like, no one capitalized going after Bernie, so therefore he was helped. I'm not totally sure I buy that, but again, it's because I think that in the long run, a stronger Biden and a stronger Warren, in theory, could still be bigger threats to Sanders, right? I think he matches up kind of well against Bloomberg.
But if Bloomberg were not the main attraction of the evening that everybody used as a foil to some extent, of course there were other sideshows, as you mentioned, like Klobuchar and Buttigieg, then wouldn't everybody be attacking Sanders because he is the front runner? And so he kind of avoided some of that.
Bloomberg was just like a glittering ruby that everyone wanted to steal and, like, attack. It was just like you couldn't resist attacking him.
Let's say that Bloomberg loses 5 points and that three of those go to Biden because that's where Biden took his points from, right? All of a sudden, Biden looks kind of rehabilitated in national polls. Bloomberg's not in the ballot in South Carolina, although I kind of sometimes think that people are using, like, Tom Steyer as, like, a proxy for Bloomberg. But still, like, a Biden revitalized cycle would not be great for Sanders. And a Warren revitalized cycle, because she is the one candidate who, although they definitely have not completely overlapping coalitions, she has more overlap than anyone else. And so if she seems revitalized, and she's raised a lot of money, apparently, her people on Twitter, who have gone kind of quiet during this long slump she's had, have been very excited about the performance. You know, I mean, that could help.
I mean, the top
that could
three,
help her and her the, Bernie a little bit at the margin, too.
The top three in our forecast model in Nevada are Sanders, Biden, Warren, Buttigieg. Sorry, top four, I guess. But Sanders, Biden, Warren, I mean, I do take Nate's point, which is, like, if Biden was losing some support because of Bloomberg's entrance, then does Bloomberg's potentially media-inflated rise and potentially media-accelerated fall after tonight's debate, is that really good news for Biden in Nevada? Is that really good news for Warren in Nevada? I mean, you know, Biden does have kind of the – I think Sanders faces a headwind with the Culinary Union, right, because of the Medicare for All stuff. Biden, therefore, has the wind at his back with that, right? So organizationally and temperamentally, as far as establishment people wanting Biden and those establishment people being in charge of mechanisms that then push out people who actually participate in these caucuses, I mean, you could see some of that shaken out really well for him.
Biden. Okay, so I want to put a kind of pinpoint on why you say that Bloomberg was terrible.
I'm a human and, like, I watch debate and I have a very inexact correlation between like the way I see debate and the way I think voters will, but some performances are so transparently awful that like I feel confident.
Do you agree, Claire,
going on the podcast?
Do you agree, Claire?
I wrote this in the live blog initially when I was talking about Bloomberg's flat affect in the midst of all the craziness on stage. I said I couldn't tell if it was an asset or a liability because, well, I think he misused his space on the stage, right? The first thing he said after Warren attacked him for some of the comments, right, the sexist comments, is he didn't address it at all. He just talked about his electability. And maybe he should have kept on doing that in a more forceful way. I almost think he wasn't...
Like, ignore all of the attacks and just repeat a similar talking point.
Yes. I mean, perhaps it's not the most honest or forthright thing to do, but it's a technique. And I just think... But I think that the flat affect... I mean, that was a very high energy debate, and I just think he actually didn't get in there enough. I thought, like, I saw some people being like, oh, is his line shooting back to Bernie about, like, who wrote the tax code? Everyone was like, ooh, Bern. And I was like, I don't know. Was it? Like,
no, I didn't think that came across. The line about three houses, I mean, it just seems, I don't know. But, like, that was second half of the debate. The second half was, like, merely bad, you know? But, like, look, there is the chance. And I feel it's like a really pundity saying, so even my James Carville brownie points. There's a chance that Bloomberg support is a mile wide and an inch deep. If you look at these polls and you ask, are you firmly committed to your choice? The Bloomberg voters are the least likely to say, yes, I'm firmly committed. And sometimes the rule in politics is last in, first out. If you get a rapid surge, then those voters are not very committed to you, and it doesn't take more than the wind blowing the wrong way for them to kind of fall off your tree and back into someone else's lap.
So like what would have happened to Kamala Harris after the first debate, where by the second debate, she had lost almost all.
Well, everything is kind of compressed and accelerated now. And you do have this unprecedented quality of Bloomberg. Number one, having entered the race so late that like kind of things are compressed and accelerated. Number two, I mean, maybe he has a high floor because of the spending. But like, again, the floor seemed like it was at 9 or 10% before. And if he were to revert to 9 or 10%, then his campaign is toast. The one reason I want to hedge a little bit is because we don't really have that good a read on, like, the trajectory in the status quo. It's possible that if there were no debate...
What do you Bloomberg, mean by that?
I mean that, like, it kind of seemed in the past week that Bloomberg was kind of flattening out a bit, right? Mm-hmm. That he was at 15.5% 5 days ago, polling average at 16.2% now. I have seen plenty of times when you thought something was stalling out and then they wound up going to 22 anyway. And I've seen plenty of times where you correctly can kind of identify the peak and the valley. So, you know, if Bloomberg were going to be at 20% because he had that momentum anyway, and now he winds up at 17, people will say the debate didn't hurt him. But, like, I just refuse to believe that, like, that debate didn't hurt him.
All right.
You know what I mean? We don't know what the polling average would have been in a week anyway, so we can't say that for sure. But, like, he did not come across as – I mean, he came across as, like, a – out of touch, rich plutocrat who only recently became a Democrat. I mean, he really like he. I
true to himself.
I mean, that's authenticity right there.
Yeah.
But like, why wasn't he better coach for this? And like, honestly, like, well, why did they let him debate? Because it would have been damaging. Okay, but like, that's probably a finite amount of damage. Whereas like, I mean, this is like a big downside risk.
We're going to find out, and we have a lot more to talk about. But first, today's podcast is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, and growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. Codable co-founder Gretchen Huebner experienced how challenging hiring can be after unsuccessfully searching for a new game artist to grow her education tech company. But then she switched to ZipRecruiter and saw an immediate difference. And you can too by signing up for free at ZipRecruiter.com/538. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. And by using ZipRecruiter's screening questions to filter candidates, Gretchen found it easier to focus on the best ones. Then she found the right one. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at this web address, ZipRecruiter.com/538. That's ZipRecruiter.com/538. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Today's podcast is also brought to you by Ring. Ring's mission is to make neighborhoods safer. You might already know about their smart video doorbells and cameras that protect millions of people everywhere. Ring helps you stay connected to your home anywhere in the world. So if there's a package delivery or surprise visitor, you'll get an alert and be able to see, hear, and speak to them all from your phone. Listeners can get a special offer on a Ring welcome kit available right now at ring.com/538. The kit includes a video doorbell and a Chime Pro, which is just what you need to start building a ring of security around your home today. Go to ring.com/538. Again, that's ring.com/538. We're back, and we've spent a lot of time talking about Bloomberg, and we're going to talk about the other candidates. But first, I want to play a little bit of a game. So I'm going to read you the headlines from the main news outlets, and I want you to tell me which is the most correct. New York Times, Democrats unleash onslaught of attacks at Nevada debate, and then subhead, Bloomberg draws sharp jabs from rivals. Washington Post, Democrats draw sharp contrasts in debate fraught with heated exchanges.
Did they draw sharp contrasts?
Wall Street Journal. Candidates attack each other in fiery debate. And that's not even the main headline. The main headline is China struggles to give care to patients with coronavirus.
Maybe more important.
Fox News.
Good for you, Wall Street Journal.
Fox News. Bloomberg under siege at chaotic debate debut. Warren goes on attack in bid to revive campaign.
CNN. That's Fox?
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
CNN. Democrats go on attack at fiery debate.
I like Fox's better.
Then next headline, next main headline, Warren accuses Bloomberg of calling women horse-faced lesbians. I mean, that's the most clickable, maybe, of all of those headlines.
I'm sorry.
SEO, SEO, baby. Horse-faced lesbians.
That's such an
NBC News. Democrats pile on Bloomberg over stop and frisk arrest. I feel if you... Given the amount of media hype that Bloomberg has had for someone who
Wait, you didn't answer the question about which headline.
I think he's trying to answer it, but
I'm trying to answer it.
Okay.
Given the amount of hype that Bloomberg has had from the media, from all these websites that we've talked about, all these news organizations, if you don't have Bloomberg at the top of your headline, maybe contrasted with Warren or something, then you f***ed up.
I honestly think Fox's was
so
the best.
Who won? So Fox is the best.
I think Fox is the best.
And just to reiterate, Fox's, Bloomberg under siege at chaotic debate debut, Warren goes on attack in bid to revive campaign. So the award for best headline of the evening goes to Fox News.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Fair and balanced.
Fair and balanced. Amen. All right. So let's talk about some of the other candidates on the debate stage. Biden. We haven't talked that much about him. You suggested that perhaps he gets some points from a possible Bloomberg tumble in the polls. Why? What about his performance would suggest that this might put him on an upward trend?
Nothing about his performance. Everything about Bloomberg's performance, I think.
So no, he seemed genuine. I think Biden was genuinely fine.
But
maybe
Nate,
even good.
But Nate, if we're talking, like, I think which one has more effect, Biden's performance or Bloomberg's lack of performance? To me, it seems pretty clear that it's Bloomberg's lack of performance. If Bloomberg weren't in that, if Bloomberg weren't in that debate, Joe Biden would be getting more heat. I mean, Biden kind of performed like middle of road, right? I think he's probably had a better debate.
Well, some of the commentary I heard was like, oh, you finally saw Biden be more forceful this evening.
Honestly, I kind of felt at times like Biden, you know, particularly in the first half of the debate, that Biden wasn't talking very much, which again, I don't think is bad for him right now.
And also, he had Bloomberg on stage to make him seem more liberal by comparison.
That's actually a great point and probably like does help. I mean, he was the one who drew the protesters at the very end. I believe they were protesting the deportations during the Obama administration. And that's the thing that like happens to Biden a fair amount on the campaign trail is like he gets protesters, right? And so he's still the guy who's going to draw those protesters during a big debate hall. So I think that's kind of, you know, that was like a little bit of a reminder of the controversial nature of Joe Biden among some on the left liberal spectrum of the Democratic Party. But I don't remember what the original question was.
No, but
I've meandered down the...
How was Biden's performance?
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was like actually above average, not grading on a curve. I don't know if it was terrific. It was above average for any candidate and maybe well above average for Biden. I mean, he seemed more energetic, right? Maybe he didn't need a ton of speaking time necessarily. I think it's right. People use the term moderate to describe Joe Biden and maybe in the context of the Democratic Party, he's a moderate. But there's actually a lot of daylight between Joe Biden or Pete Buttigieg and Michael Bloomberg, who is a true centrist and maybe even erring a little on the side of conservative on fiscal issues. It's not even quite clear. I'm actually surprised that like Bloomberg kind of didn't really try and didn't quite know how to like conceal that, right? He kind of gave like the kind of he could have given like the Tom Steyer response, which is kind of the layup, like, well, I've been benefiting from the system, so I know how much. I mean,
yeah,
he seems like a guy who's not being used to being challenged, and he kept telling people like, oh, don't interrupt me, give me my full time, right? Like, it just comes across really poorly, and like his advisors did a shitty job of preparing for this debate.
Well, I think
we're
that
back
they,
to Bloomberg
I think
now.
They, yeah, I know, but I think they prepared him for the specific attacks that they knew he would get, but they didn't do the 30,000 feet up view of it, which is how do you answer the billionaire question? And Nate, you're right. He should answer it how Steyer does, right? I benefited from the system. I'm a good businessman. I can stand on these two legs. And on the other, you know, sort of political spectrum question, he probably should have pulled something akin to like the Buttigieg thing where it's like, I'm here to unite America with like sensible solutions. And as you can see from my record, I follow what I believe is right as far as policy, not what I think, not what the parties tell me is right. I'm an independent thinker just like you. There you go. I just wrote your campaign lines, right? Like it's not that hard.
Go to ClaireMalone.com.
Yeah. Actually, that I lost control of that site because I couldn't pay for it every month. just subscribe to my newsletter. Let's stop talking about Bloomberg, though. You were asking other questions.
So the second part of the award-winning headline from Fox News was Warren goes on attack in bid to revive campaign.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is for that sure. true? Like, yeah. Was her campaign in need of revival? And how does tonight
hell to the yes.
affect? How does tonight?
She got 9%. Biden got 8%. She got 9% in New Hampshire, a state that borders the state where she's a senator. So her campaign is clearly in need of some help. She has seemed to raise decent amounts of money in the past few days.
Well, her campaign tweeted during,
raised like $1 million during the debate itself.
Right, which is pretty remarkable.
I mean, in Nevada, we have her kind of in a three-way tie for third place. And no one really, as we've talked about earlier this week, no one really knows what the hell's going on in Nevada, except it's probably good for Bernie. But Warren does have one thing in Nevada which is useful for her, which is that it's a state like Iowa where literally second preferences matter. And she is a lot of people's second choice. And so that could actually help her with a surprisingly good showing in Nevada. You know, what happens if she finishes second in Nevada?
I think she might be a good
chaos.
I think she might culturally be a good Nevada candidate.
Yeah.
Which is like,
she is Western. Oklahoma?
Yes,
that's what I mean.
But
I think culturally, like I do think, I actually haven't been to any campaign stops in Nevada, so I'm not sure how different her regular stump is, which I've certainly seen. But like, you know, her whole story of like middle class hard scrabble, like Nevada is a state that was hit hugely by the housing crisis. That's where she staked her career, right? Like the whole narrative that her campaign spins, which is obviously true because it's her life story about being a single mother, like that tracks with people, right? From Oklahoma, went to a commuter school. Nevada is a state that's certainly known for like, you know, casinos. Favored by Nate Silver. But I do
I don't favor casinos. I favor the game of poker, Claire.
Sorry. Where do you go?
In
Las Vegas.
You don't have to tell, actually.
I like the Bellagio's really nice room.
Today's podcast sponsored by the Bellagio.
Aria's really nice room.
I loved it in Ocean's 11. But I think like she has this kind of like culturally she is Western and she is kind of like her record kind of tracks with Nevada's state biography, for lack of a better phrase. And also to go back to, she does have that kind of like, I'm the advocate of the working man, but also the working woman, right? Like, you know, I don't know. She's not, I wouldn't count her out in the state, especially after the performance tonight. And again, to reemphasize for listeners, we don't know if the polls are very good.
Yeah, there's another take that I want to push back on about Nevada, which is, and also will come up when early voting is mentioned in general. And the notion is that there are a lot of people who vote early in Nevada, which is true, although we don't really know how to benchmark it because you've never had early voting before, right? The people who vote early are not the people who are undecided on a candidate, mm-hmm. right? They're generally not people who are like, oh, damn it, I voted for Bernie, but now I wish I'd voted for Warren. They are people who already decided that they're going to vote for Bernie. And so I think it is impactful, but it's not as impactful as like some of the takes that you read would imply. I mean, it's hard to know. Polls are sensitive to like how many college educated voters they have in the electorate. We should know that Warren has been a little boomer bust in the first two primaries. She beat her polls in Iowa and was not that far from like kind of being in this three-way tie. And then, although she was meaningfully far, but not that far, and then totally bombed in New Hampshire. You know, I don't think, by the way, we haven't talked about our friends Amy and Pete.
I was just about to get to them.
I don't think that what Klobuchar did worked. And I think
said her name right.
Klobuchar.
Good for you.
Klobuchar was someone who had moved to 9% in Nevada. So if you were to have some drift of her support to Warren's, then Warren kind of jumps into second place. And although Biden may gain from Klobuchar too or whatever, right? You know, there's Steyer sitting there in Nevada who was not on the debate stage. He would seem like he is a...
Which I did not realize until halfway through the debate.
Yeah, he's... I mean, I don't know what people are going to make of Buttigieg's performance.
You said that you didn't think that what Klobuchar did worked. And... you know, what she did or what happened on the debate stage was basically that Buttigieg and Klobuchar went after each other in very specific ways about their record, about Klobuchar not remembering the name of Mexico's president.
And she said, "Are you calling me dumb?"
Yes. Do you agree with Nate's characterization that it didn't work?
I found the whole exchange, on a human level, I found it fascinating because it seems pretty obvious to me that they pretty strongly dislike each other. They are fighting for similar places. They are in similar places in the poll and fighting to kind of come upward.
And fighting for similar voters.
Fighting for similar voters. I am not sure it worked for Klobuchar in particular. I think I was really struck when she said, "Are you calling me dumb?" Because it wasn't, I mean, it's not like a thing that we hear politicians say all that much. Usually it's kind of like a clean pivot or like a nasty jab back. And it was its own kind of nasty jab, but like, I don't know. It was truly kind of like, it felt a little off, but the whole exchange felt off. Buttigieg felt off too. Like it just felt, they both came off as petty.
Yeah.
And I described it as a sideshow because they were kind of like fighting with each other while the other end of the debate stage with like Warren and Sanders was, I think, having certainly sharp exchanges with Bloomberg, with each other, but they were tending to tie it back to, you know, Warren kept on trying to pivot to voter stories, which is kind of like a classic Obama era campaign pivot. Sanders, you know, replied to Bloomberg about the creeping threat of socialism, or, you know, Bloomberg calling him a communist. He said, "No,
cheap shot.
America as it stands now is socialism for the rich and bootstrapping for the poor," kind of thing. I thought that was like a, you know, that's a good rebuttal of a broader point. Whereas Buttigieg and Klobuchar's debates were so specific to their own personal records and politics and just kind of felt small in the grand scheme of things in the debate, and mostly just kind of, I think, served to make both of them look sort of down in the muck of minutiae in a way that wasn't great.
All right. So now that we've given a general sense of your takes on how the night played out, how do you think this affects the polls?
I think there is downside risk for Bloomberg, and that's the most important dynamic right now.
And upside risk, or upside potential for?
I mean, I think it's fairly clear that Bloomberg took a lot of votes from Biden. I think in terms of how he's affected the media narrative, it kind of probably leads to less coverage of the whole group of candidates, including Buttigieg, Warren, and Klobuchar. I think independently of anything else, that clearly Warren, at least, I think, may earn some of her support as they drifted off back, right? And so So I don't know. I mean, I think we have been honest on this podcast about, number one, we can guess wrong, right? I think we've been honest on this podcast about times when it's very unclear which way the debate will move, you know? I mean, frankly, I don't think we necessarily knew that, like, until we got our polling results back, that Klobuchar would have this big surge after New Hampshire. She got kind of pretty favorable media buzz, but kind of catapulted her into something that was more significant. But, like, I feel like this debate is a 8.5 out of 10 in terms of knowing which candidates did well. I mean, the Bloomberg people are now saying it took him only 45 minutes to get his feet underneath him, right? I mean, okay, you know, those were 45 of the worst minutes in debate I can remember kind of seeing. Maybe he can come back next week and be better, but it seemed like the problems he had were pretty fundamental, but expectations are lower now. Anyway, I mean, this kind of raises, again, the whole question of kind of how deep Bloomberg support was to begin with, and it kind of coincides with maybe a shift in the media narrative around him.
I'm looking at these pictures on the Daily Mail of the debate stage, and it's funny because it's Bloomberg's off to the side, and all the other candidates are like kind of smushed together. He literally does look like the outsider looking in. Like, it is kind of this funny. It's a good reminder that he was not a Democrat until
I mean, we've been so. I won't speak for we, right? I think I have been like kind of so obsessed with the strategic components of Bloomberg's campaign, and how much does all the spending matter, and how is he being covered by the media? How big is his polling surge? What's his path to victory? That we haven't really asked kind of these very fundamental questions about Bloomberg, which is like, he is someone who is, like I said, pretty far removed from the traditional Democratic resume, right? And was not exactly, like I said, not exactly trying to pander almost seems like not quite the word I'm looking for, right? But not seeming to adapt in even a perfunctory way towards saying the things that even Joe Biden. I mean, Joe Biden has been like I said, a liberal to moderate Democrat, which is different than Bloomberg, who's a former Republican, right? But Bloomberg like didn't seem like he was willing to lower himself to try to win actual voters over. And voters have seen a lot of commercials about Bloomberg and not heard very much from him. And so if voters like say, okay, I need to weigh the paid media for Bloomberg against what I actually hear. And if they weigh the small bit they've seen pretty heavily, I mean, I don't know.
Can I ask a meta question?
Yeah.
What if voters actually think Bloomberg did okay? Or is that an inane question because the media tells voters what they think they saw, and the media thinks that Bloomberg didn't do well?
I think the reason Bloomberg surged in the polls is because of a media-crafted image of Bloomberg, which includes both paid and earned media. So that's why it's particularly vulnerable for him. This is not a case like Donald Trump, where someone knows how to throw out red meat to the base, you know, and then, like, if people had pilloried, like, Warren's performance, oh, she was too aggressive. I mean, she at least knows how to, like, kind of play to like actual Democratic voters, has a lot of experience doing that, but you know, we don't really see. And by the way, even Trump by February had survived many, many, many months as the front runner. Bloomberg has had 1 week where he surged to third place, maybe second place in the polls, still 10 points behind Bernie Sanders, right? This is not necessarily very durable. This is his first real test, and he didn't do very well. And like, I don't know, on prediction markets, I've never seen, I don't think, a candidate plunge this far after a debate where he's gone from 30% of winning the nomination, probably too high, to 20%, more reasonable. So he fell by a third based on just the initial gut feeling that these Scottish teens have about the debate.
So just to close things out, still on our forecast, it shows that no one, you know, the category no one, has the best chance of winning the majority of pledged delegates. And that was addressed directly in the second part of the debate. They asked the candidates, if nobody wins a majority, should the person with the most delegates be the nominee? Everyone said no, let the process play out at the convention, except for Bernie Sanders, who said the person who has the most delegates going into the convention should be the nominee. What did you make of that moment?
On brand.
Yeah, everyone gave the correct response according to the 538 model, where Bernie Sanders is far more likely to be hurt by a scenario where he has the plurality but not the majority.
And Bernie knows the delegate math.
Yeah, I'm actually a little surprised. Obviously, Bernie gave the response he should probably give anyway. I'm a little surprised that, like, the candidates were so blatant about just saying, well, work it out at the convention. You know what I mean?
Hey, man, relax.
Because there is like a lot of outcry over. I mean, I would tell you how I would answer the question if I were one of the nine Bernies.
Oh,
right?
Thank God.
One of the nine Bernies?
Non-Bernies.
I would say, look, the rules say that if there is no majority, then the delegates get to have their say. And there's a reason for that, which there may be different metrics of popular support, right? Let's say that someone has a few more delegates, but I've won 10 states in a row. Maybe I should be the nominee, right? Let's say that that 1K has more delegates, but I have more votes, actually. Maybe I should be the nominee, right? Let's say 1K has more delegates, but a clear majority of Democrats say that I should be the nominee in polls. Maybe I should be the nominee.
All right. Well, there you have it. And I think that is a wrap for tonight's podcast. Thank you, Nate.
Thank you, Galen.
Thank you, Claire.
Thanks, Galen.
My name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow is in the control room. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or a review in the Apple Podcast Store or tell someone about us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.